It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. Got a great panel looking backward at the year 2013 and ahead to CES. It's all ahead next on TWiT. See you.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 437, recorded December 22nd, 2013. No manual retweets. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Personal Capital. With Personal Capital, you'll finally have all your financial life in one place and get a clear view of everything you own. Best of all, it's free. To sign up, visit personalcapital.com/twit. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free two-week trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code TWIT12. And by Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it right from your desk. To get this special offer, go to Stamps.com, click the microphone, and enter TWIT. That's Stamps.com, offer code TWIT. It's time for TWIT This Week in Tech, the show that explains, explicates, obsesses about the week's tech news. This is the last TWIT of 2013. Next week will be a best of. So we have assembled some of our favorite Twitters. Oh, can't say that. Trademarked. Starting on my left, Mr. Jason Heiner of the Tech Republic, CBS Interactive. Great to see you, Jason, in Knoxville, Tennessee. Louisville.
Louisville. Kentucky. Exactly.
Kentucky.
Always a pleasure. Always a pleasure.
Got the wrong state and city this time.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Louisville, Kentucky.
Yes, sir.
Nice to see you again, Jason. Happy holidays.
Thank you.
From, I'm going to get it wrong, Tucson, Arizona. Am I right, Mr. Ed Bott?
Not even close. Wrong city and state. Santa Fe, New Mexico.
It's the same. You see, I live in California, the only state that matters. And I know you're somewhere down there in sand country. He's somewhere in sipping bourbon country. It doesn't really matter. And Patrick Beja, he's in Paris, France. That one I'm going to get right.
Yeah. There you go. That one you can get right.
The capital of the world. Hello, everybody. I'm sorry. I apologize. I don't know why I can never remember either Jason or Ed. I don't know. I do this every time, and I apologize.
We would lose the entertainment value if you didn't. So there it is.
I was listening to a book about Breaking Bad, really excellent book called Difficult Men, about third golden age of television. And it turns out that Breaking Bad's in New Mexico. It was going to be in the valley, like the San Fernando Valley. It's in New Mexico for one reason only, tax breaks.
Right.
Turned out to be brilliant. I mean, that landscape really made Breaking Bad.
Yeah. The state of New Mexico was offering very nice subsidies to filmmakers and TV production companies at the time. And yeah, the landscape became a character on that series.
Probably not what New Mexico was thinking, you know, making it the meth capital of...
Actually, there was an upgrade for some parts of our reputation. So,
that's the one thing you always... There's a lot of trips out to the desert, and it's beautiful. I mean, it just looks gorgeous, yeah. So...
Well, come on down and visit sometime.
I shall. So nice. I've known Ed for 20 years now, since you started appearing regularly on Dvorak on computers back in the 90s.
Yes, indeed.
You were editor-in-chief at the time of Windows Magazine, I think. Is that right?
PC Computing?
I get that one wrong, too, every time. I'm going to put this third eye back on my head. Maybe it'll help me get it right. I don't know. So we were talking before the show about Dogecoin.
Thank you for bringing it up. This makes me so happy.
Everybody knows about Bitcoin, the cryptocurrency invented by a person or persons unknown using the pseudonym Satoshi Nakamoto. He's disappeared, but Bitcoin lives on, and obviously people paying a lot of attention to it. You can buy in San Francisco, you can buy cupcakes with Bitcoin and drugs with Bitcoin. But Bitcoin is not the only cryptocurrency. There are quite a few. Litecoin is another well-known, well-respected one. But there is a and I don't even know if I should call it a joke cryptocurrency that's become very popular called Dogecoin. It is a play off of an internet meme. There's the cat, right? The I can has cheeseburger cat. And Doge is like the dog response. Is that right, Patrick? The dog response to the cat?
Not exactly. It's not really the response. It's just a funny looking dog with some similarly weird grammar and spelling. But it's very funny. It's very quirky, and it lives mostly on things like 4chan and Reddit.
Of course, it does.
Yeah. Well, obviously. And that's where this dodgy coin thing is taking off. It started off as a joke, apparently. And I think the reason why it's – well, obviously the reason why it's popular is the only difference between Dogecoin and other cryptocurrencies like Litecoin and things like that is that. It's the meme. It's bathed in that stupid, silly humor. And I think we were talking about before the show, it's now the seventh most popular cryptocurrency, which isn't, you know, it doesn't mean it's actually going anywhere.
It's based on Litecoin. It's using the same technology as Litecoin. Yeah. And according to somebody in the chat room, it's now trading at roughly 10,000 Dogecoins to the dollar. However, I've just learned that many of the people here at our office are mining Dogecoin. Like the encoding servers we use to take these shows and encode them in all the different formats. It's not working all the time. So when it's not working, it's making Dogecoin. Is that, am I saying it right, by the way? Is it, I think it's Doge. If you go to Know Your Meme,
that's what Wikipedia, that's how they list it also.
Know Your Meme says it's part of a series on interior monologue captioning. That's the meme type, interior monologue captioning. as in I Can Has Cheeseburger. First posted 5 months ago on Know Your Meme. So it's
a little bit, yeah, it's a bit older. The meme itself is a little bit older than that, but it became very popular over the summer, I think. And it uses things like the kind of things that the dog says are much something or wow something or many something.
In the software, the wallet that you're using has in Comic Sans, Doge's favorite font, and it uses Doge speak.
So it says for the menu, or, I mean the label for the menu where you see your wallets, it says much receive. The history, the tracking of your exchanges, it says many history. Your addresses are very address. And mining is called dig with a little paw from Doge. But, you know, there is a kind of a tech angle here, a serious rather tech angle, which is the cryptocurrencies are super popular right now.
Right.
And they're
right.
One of the very, very hot things. And it must be both infuriating and frustrating to all the people who are betting on these kinds of things and investing so much money in them right now to see that something like this can rise to the seventh place. Again, seventh place doesn't mean a lot because none of those are worth a lot except for maybe two or three. But just because Reddit and 4chan and whoever else has taken a like into it.
You're about to say this, so I won't say it. The absurdity of currency in general.
I guess that's not exactly what I was about to say, but it's true as well.
we all pretend that the U.S. dollar, for instance, has some intrinsic value. It's a piece of paper, has no intrinsic value. And then people say, well, it would if we were tied to gold, except that gold has very little intrinsic value. The value of gold based on its industrial value is much less than the thousands of dollars an ounce.
Well, I mean, there's some really
good. It's all made up.
Yeah,
it's
really
the value of the trust
still
you put in the government's economy, isn't it? So it does have value.
If we were still tied, if the dollar was still tied to gold, there have been some really interesting analysis that have been done of how much gold has fluctuated much more than the dollar has even just over the past decade.
It would be very volatile right now, in other words.
It'd be very, very volatile, yes.
It was good that they untied it.
Yeah. Exactly. The dollar's been much, much more stable. Now, I guess you could argue that if they were still tied, maybe that would have stabilized gold. I don't know. But they're, you know, it's the tail wagging the dog, right? So
in this case, the Doge.
There you go.
But I think that's what's interesting because Bitcoin, in a way, kind of underscores that what we call fiat currency that is based on trust, on full faith and credit of the United States government. So Bitcoin is also a fiat currency in the sense that it's imagined that it's worth something. But then Dogecoin, to me, underscores the absurdity of all this. But it also points out something that I think is a little bit seamier, which is that, at least to some people, and I'll include myself, Bitcoin looks like a very clever pyramid scheme. It is guessed that the earliest Bitcoin creators, including Nakamoto is probably a Bitcoin billionaire right now, were he to convert his Bitcoins into dollars. And that the people who start these currencies are, in fact, potentially profiting greatly from all of this attention and speculation.
Yeah. What I don't understand, Leo, and I know you've talked about this a number of different shows, so maybe there's consensus on it. I don't understand why it's spiking. So you look at what Bitcoin has done just in the past couple quarters. It's ridiculous. You know, I mean,
yeah, it's gone back down a little bit, but still,
it has gone back down. You're right.
Outrageous.
It has gone back down.
Yeah.
But,
well, that shows me there's a lot of speculation in it, right?
Yes. Yes.
Right.
Yep.
Well, it's understandable that there's, we call it speculation. There's also potential. Speculation is people seeing potential in that currency. And there is a huge potential there. I mean, it could, if it stabilizes at some point, it could become, well, what the promise of it is, which is a currency that is not controlled. It's kind of what the web and the internet did for communication and for rather media. This could do for currency, and I don't think it's only baseless speculation. I think there is a possibility somewhere out there that this could become stable in the future. Now, of course, it's only a possibility, but it's understandable that people are betting on that possibility, because if it was certain, then obviously everyone would be doing it, and it wouldn't have the value it does.
The Winklevoss twins, who have heavily invested in Bitcoin, proving that they, in fact, should never have had any money from Mark Zuckerberg at all. But they say that Bitcoin will reach $40,000 a coin next year. Currently, it's about $600. It's been as high, I think, as $1,200 on Mt. Gox, which is just one of the it looks like it got over $1,500 on Mt. Gox a few days ago.
It's just so bizarre. It's almost like people are treating it, instead of like a currency, it's almost like it's being treated like some kind of investment mechanism.
yes.
Right? It's like,
it's a pyramid scheme. It's a scam.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is. But I think the Dogecoin is great because it is simultaneously making fun of it and making a little money for its inventors. Now,
if you really want to go and figure out what it is, isn't it the equivalent of a collateralized security? There's this thing off there that has some value, but really it's being traded as if it were shares
right.
in something. The same way that mortgages were packaged into certificates.
Right. And look how well that worked out for us.
Well, and that was exactly where I was going with that. Unfortunately, the way that Bitcoin works, I don't think it can get big enough to avoid being manipulated by large numbers
right.
of people.
That's interesting. So. Now, Overstock.com announced this week, in fact, I think today, that they are going to accept Bitcoin for buying stuff at Overstock.com. So you can get real stuff with Bitcoin.
I think you can pay your WordPress.com account in Bitcoin, can't you?
Yeah, there's one of our sponsors, ProXPN, which is an open VPN, takes Bitcoin. As I said, there's a cupcake shop in San Francisco that takes Bitcoin.
So what does that buy you? 500 cupcakes for one Bitcoin?
Well, there's the irony of it is, remember that early on, somebody bought a pizza. He used thousands of Bitcoins. It's like a multi-million dollar pizza. Now,
oh my gosh.
Had he known, but at the time it wasn't worth much. And
wow.
To me, I think that anybody who takes Bitcoin now, and I include myself because you can donate to us, we take Bitcoin, it's purely like, well, what's the risk of this? Sure, I'll sell a few. You're not going to sell a lot of cupcakes on Bitcoin, or Overstock's probably not going to sell a lot of stuff. But, hey, collect those Bitcoins, because at some point, there seems some likelihood they may be worth hundreds of times more in a year or two, right? The only thing is, when do you get out?
Or zero.
Yeah.
So that's the question, is when do you get out? China has announced...
Getting out last week was probably a good idea.
And my flu is worth nothing now. I have a
thousands of flus. I remember flus and wuffies and flatter. Flatter's still out there. That's a some
Flatter. Yeah. Flatter still works.
Flus was the virtual currency from the original .com bubble. I think Whoopi Goldberg was the spokesperson for
FLOOZ. It was, promoted by Whoopi Goldberg in 1999, a series of television advertisements. It was created by iVillage founder Robert Levitan in an attempt to establish a currency unique to internet merchants. It comes, the problem is it sounds like floozy. It's not a good name. They were notified by the FBI in 2001 that a Russian organized crime syndicate was using flus and stolen credit card numbers as part of a money laundering scheme.
Wow. It really is interesting, though, virtual currency, that it is going mainstream, that it is going to much larger attention. It's got the attention of the government. When we first did Tech Republic, for the first 5 years, we had what we called tech points, which was essentially a form of virtual currency. And you got them like the base currency was, you got for reading an article. You got a lot more for participating in the forums. You got some for, basically rating articles if you thumb them up or thumb them down. And it was really interesting because part of the promise at the beginning was, well, eventually you'll be able to get swag with them, or you could turn them in to do. We were really wrestling over what should we let people do with them? Should we let them could they not see ads for a year or something if they have enough points? So we really wrestled with it. After about 5 years, we never really decided. We never figured out the right way to handle it. And so at some point, I can't even remember why, we kind of just said, they're going away.
We converted them to flus. And it disappeared.
But man, you should have seen the revolt when we ended tech. I mean, it was one of those things that we thought, everybody's kind of forgotten about them by now because they really hadn't been a prominent site.
So why are you bringing it up again?
Yeah, I know. Exactly.
Don't stay on the Tech Republic points pay.
Yeah, the tech points. But I guess the interesting thing is I don't think the world was really ready for virtual currency. Was part of it. We weren't the only ones. Lots of sites were doing this kind of thing. And but now it does seem, at least despite all of the crazy inflationary activity going on with Bitcoin and everything, there's an appetite, obviously, for digital currency. And it's hard to think that it will be Bitcoin with everything that's going on with Bitcoin. But at some point, this is going to happen, and this is probably going to happen a lot sooner than we anticipated. It's suddenly one of the big stories of 2013.
We can't stop talking about it, but I don't know it's hard for me to to assess what it means. I don't know if it's important, if it's not important, if it's a scam, if it's the next big thing. It's very, and Dogecoin, I love it because they made a joke out of it, and yet we're mining Dogecoin. In fact, Father Robert Ballister, one of our hosts, he hosts Know How and This Week in Enterprise Tech, he says Dogecoin's actually kind of interesting. It's based on Litecoin's proof of work reverse hash, designed not to kind of resist what's happening with Bitcoin. You know, with Bitcoin now, the way Bitcoin was set up is that as more and more processors are doing the work, it becomes harder and harder to solve. The problems get harder so that it evens out. So it makes it hard to mine. Apparently this is exactly what Dogecoin and Litecoin are avoiding. It's more resistant to the idea of throwing a lot of power on it because it needs a lot of memory, which he says, Robert is a priest, so you can listen to him, makes it more for the common man. So in 2 weeks, we're going to do an issue of Know How, in which Robert will assemble a reasonably inexpensive mining rig based on an AMD GPU that should be good for about 12,000 Doge a day. So watch in 2 weeks. you too could be Doge mining.
That's about $1.20, right?
Yeah, $1.20.
Yeah, pretty much.
Wait, yeah, 12,000. So yeah,
$1.20. No, you nailed it.
$1.20 a day.
Now, see, to me, I'm much more interested in gems because I'm playing Clash of Clans. It used to be donuts. I should not laugh at people because Linden dollars, donuts, whatever. I spent some serious money on the Simpsons Tapped Out. The New York Times yesterday had a story about George Yao, who was they call him master of his virtual domain. He was the king of Clash of Clans players. This is a game that is now netting the Finnish company, Supercell, as much as $2.4 million a day. $2.4 million a day, people are buying gems to play this game. Now, it's actually a good game. There's some strategy involved. It's a fun game to play. SoftBank just took a 51% stake in Supercell for $1.5 billion. There's money in them, there, fake currencies. Mm. I've only spent $20 on Clash of Clans, and that's it. I'm not going to spend any more. I've learned my lesson. It's a Skinner box, somebody said. Paula Dean says, hi, Paula. Hey, love you. Love your show. Paula Dean says, it's a Skinner box. It's true. Well, these well-designed video games today are not fun. They're compulsive, right? You have to play. Are you harvesting right now, Lisa? Are you doing presents and Tapped Out? No. She's already done it today. Do you? Any of you guys play any of these games?
No.
No, Zynga doesn't have a hook in your mouth, Ed Bot? Is that because you're older and wiser?
Too busy.
Ah, you got a life.
They don't pay me for that.
Yeah. I think I have to say we are distracted to death at this point.
Yeah. I'm a gamer. I play a lot of games, but unfortunately, I have to refrain from commenting on any gaming story because I work in the gaming industry.
Do you? What do you do?
Yeah, I work at Blizzard in Europe.
Oh, I love Blizzard.
Yeah, I love them too. So
Blizzard's awesome. There's nothing wrong with World of Warcraft that a 60 level mage can't cure. Our show today brought to you. We'll talk some more. I think gaming is fascinating, but I do think that, you know, see, you're working for an old school gaming company. Although you wouldn't have said an MMORPG was old school a few years ago, but it is.
Yeah, wow.
Right? $40 a month or whatever. Hey, by the way, does Blizzard still charge for World of Warcraft?
Of course.
Okay. Because I thought there might be a trend away from that.
Well, I don't know about that, but we did announce and started the beta for a virtual card game called Hearthstone, which is going really well.
Can't wait to play. Can you get me in that Hearthstone? I promise to buy lots of virtual currency.
Blizzard has virtual currency, right?
That's right. Awesome. Gold mining in World of Warcraft is a big bucks for a lot of Chinese kids, right?
Yep.
But I love StarCraft. That was a classic. I loved Diablo. Great game. World of Warcraft played for a while, then I realized it's mostly like run, kill something. Run. I got tired of running. It was too much exercise.
Too much virtual exercise.
Too much fake exercise. If you would tie it to a treadmill so that I had to run in real life.
And you burn 500 calories every time you play. Then
that would be a game.
Yeah, there you're talking.
It'd be 111 pounds today.
I would be wasting away. But that's okay, because Diablo was click, 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 click. Ever watch anybody play Diablo? Click, 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 click. But that's fun. I like that.
It's super. Well, obviously I like it, but yeah. But
I'll
get you in Hearthstone. It's a really fun game.
I think it's open now, isn't it? Somebody in the chat room, they said it's open now.
No, it's not open yet, but a lot of the people that signed up for the beta have been invited, and more are being invited. So
awesome.
It's getting close.
It looks fun. That's not the card game that Notch is doing. Notch is doing a card game too, isn't he? The creator of Minecraft. For some reason, I thought he was.
Yes,
doing one.
Yes, he is. Hearthstone, I would say, is more approachable. But yeah, again, I don't want to comment on it because
I'm making you, aren't I? I'm making you flog your employer. I had no idea you were.
Try it out.
You worked. Fine. So it's Hearthstone is Heroes of Warcraft. So it's related to World of Warcraft. you get the same kind of characters and stuff. Hmm. Last thing I need is to reignite that addiction. It took me a year in going into meetings every day.
The first step, Leo, is to admit that you have a problem.
I have a problem. Ed Bott is here. Great. What are you doing these days? You're writing for ZDNet. You're covering Windows.
Yes. Windows and other things. In fact, I just did my 2013 retrospective. And interestingly, the number one read story that I posted last year was not about Microsoft or Windows at all. It was about Oracle and Java and the Ask toolbar and that crap.
Which you told us about on this show, and I was blown away, and you were absolutely right. The fact that almost everybody now with these downloaders is putting basically spyware in there.
Yeah, and it's just it's just getting worse because that's the only monetization for these things. And in fact, this week, just on Friday afternoon, a terrible time to post a story, but that's when I learned about it, so I wrote it. Google has just announced a change in their policy for Chrome extensions. And apparently it's because the adware providers have found a way to sneak into Chrome.
No.
Yeah.
And ironically, Google, which is basically a giant advertising company, doesn't like that.
Well, because what these extensions were doing was they were injecting ads onto the page and covering up Google ads.
Oh, not cool. Not cool, man.
That was 10 years, right, Ed? You just hit your 10-year anniversary blogging, right?
10-year anniversary this week as a blogger.
Oh, congratulations. I'm so glad we have you on this week to celebrate with you.
Yeah.
10 years, and he's still wearing his jammies.
I think it's I think the proper gift for a 10-year anniversary of a blogger is a tinfoil hat.
Tin is always perfect. Hey, is that a Dogecoin painting on your wall there? Somebody pointed out you have Doge on your wall behind you.
That's Lucy, one of my two dogs. And she was actually just in here. She's been running in and out of here a couple times. She was looking out the window. We have a bunny that likes to show up just outside this office window. And so she sticks her head through the wooden blinds there to see if she can spot the bunny.
At least she doesn't bark hysterically like my dog does. Ozzy
sees. That's a great likeness of her.
It's beautiful. She's a spaniel, I take it.
She's a Springer Spaniel.
Beautiful. Beautiful dog.
In terms of blogging, Ed, I like that you said that you felt like you were late to the game when you got there. 2003, you thought...
Yeah, December of 2002, right? And I thought, I'm really late to this party.
Worked out okay. Somebody in the chat room said the gift for 10-year for bloggers should be pants.
No, they'll never wear them. No point in that at all. Perfect. Hey, congratulations. That's great. That's really wonderful, Ed.
Thank you.
ZDNet.com/blog/bot, B-O-T-T. And actually, I want to kind of go through some of the year's top stories as you write it, because wouldn't be bad. This is, after all, our last show of the year to review some of the things that were in the news in 2013. Next week, Twit will be a best of. Thanks to you and all the people who've gone to the website to give us your suggestions for the best moments from 2013. We've got a really great show. Did you work on that, Anthony? Anthony Nielsen is running the board for Chad today because...
Yeah, I mean, I helped put it together, but Chad
thank you.
Picked up the clips.
Chad picked the clips. Yeah. Thank you for doing that. That'll be fun. And then we will be back in 2 weeks, and we'll look ahead. You know, so we'll look back today, and in 2 weeks we can look at the stories ahead for 2014. Great.
That means you're not going to be at CS?
Blessedly, no. We will have staff there.
Ah.
I'm sending an old priest and a young priest, and maybe with any luck we can exorcise the demons of CES. Are you going?
I will. I'll be there.
Yeah.
With bells on.
Ed, you going to CES this year?
I will be there as well. Oh. In a moment of weakness, I said yes.
CES, the Consumer Electronics Show, is one of those things where it's like childbirth. It's cleverly designed so you forget the pain of it shortly afterward.
Oh yeah, immediately.
So you're going to get you're now going to get an email from the Consumer Electronics Association telling you it's not the Consumer Electronics Show, it's the International CES. And
CES stands for nothing?
CES now stands for nothing. Which I think is perfect, but they make that clear in all that their press releases and stuff. And if you make the mistake, as I once did, of recalling the days when I went to it, when it was the Consumer Electronics Show,
right.
You get a letter from their lawyers.
Wait a minute. I can call anything I want. I could call the Poopy Butt Show if I wanted to. Why? How can they tell me what I can call it?
Oh, that, well, it's not a cease and desist letter.
Oh.
It's just a
I can call it whatever I want, right? I mean, they don't own the right to what I say.
Yeah.
It's called free speech, for crying
they're
out loud.
They're just gently guiding you.
They're guiding me. You know, we have eliminated the meaning of CES, so please ascribe it no meaning.
But speaking of the CES, you know, the pain of CES, the best photo ever, I cannot find it, is there's a photo of Natalie Del Conte on the last day of CES, or it's like the, you know, maybe the last day that they're when they were doing awards or whatever, and she did her show and then she just fell asleep right in the middle of the CNET stage, like on one of the, I mean you could just see she's just completely knocked out, and I was like. That's the symbol of CES forever.
It is exhausting. It's huge.
It is exhausting.
It's essentially uncoverable. What we're going to do this year, we for years we had a Sky booth, and it was fun. And I really actually loved it. It was also hugely expensive. And so we decided we could do a better job of covering it by sending. We're going to send Robert Ballesser, Dick DiBartolo will be there, Scott Wilkes. You know, I think we got four reporters there. And what they'll do is feed us stuff back. And what I decided, and tell me if this sounds crazy, I realized that really there's only the top layer of CES matters, the top 20 products or 30 products. After that, there is a very long tail of iPod accessories and stuff that you don't really care about. Maybe inside there's one or two jewels, which I would like to find, and I would put them in the top 30. I don't mean the top biggest names. I mean the top 30 products of interest. And after that, you can just go home. So that's what I've assigned them. I've said, look, find the top 30 products. Report back on that, and we'll be done.
I'd say it's even less than that that are really, really interesting.
Yeah, it might be.
And the thing is, with CES, there aren't any big major announcements anymore because everyone wants to do it outside of CES because they can and have their own press conference at a time where it's less crowded. So, of course, you're going to have a lot of things, and some of them are going to be interesting, but you're not going to get the big announcements that you would have gotten, even 5, 6, 7 years ago.
We don't have the money of CBS Interactive or Discovery or Spike, so I have to kind of decide, you know, what's appropriate for the amount of money we can spend.
Yeah, I go pretty much for the trends and for the meetings. The trends you start to get when you sort of and the trends are sometimes related to the meetings, but also it's kind of you just see what everybody's kind of peddling, even though a lot of it's never going to come to market.
That's the other problem with it.
A lot of the products never come to market.
Yeah, it's like maybe this is stuff we might sell you in 6 months if you show some real interest.
Yeah, it's like the Droid. What's the name of that product? The Droid. There's this one, the Motorola. Did the product they showed it at CES. It was one of the droids,
they never released it.
The Droid Bionic.
Well, they released that. They
released it like 8 months later, completely different phone. Looks nothing like it. No, not the same features at all. Yeah. Completely different, you know, device altogether.
We responded to feedback.
Yes, and we decided that was a bad idea.
Yeah. But the interesting thing, like this year, wearables are going to be everywhere. Internet of Things is going to be everywhere.
Right. No, that's a good point. You do well, yeah, and the question is if this is in reaction to what others have established as the trend, or if this is actually a trend.
I think we're really seeing an inflection point in the tech marketplace now. The idea that you have a single device that is sort of the locus of your information and computing is just gone. And so there's a lot of new things that are coming out are either vaporware or are good intentions that won't make it because of money or technology or whatever. But you're in total, I think we're really going to see the very beginnings of some really big changes at this year's CES. That's the only reason I'm going. If it were just another year where it's how big a TV can you make and how cheap of a tablet can you make, you know, I'd be somewhere else.
So now you got me scared. Yeah. Maybe we should be covering it more.
No, it's true. Actually, the decentralization thing is really, really true because the cloud is, you know, pretty much your cloud services are the center of the universe.
Plus, so, everything is getting smart, right?
Everything's getting smart. The other trend that I'm really watching is contextual computing. You know, you look at what's happening with Google now, how much more useful that has gotten. Even it was useful early on, it's even more useful now. And, you know, the services that look at you and then they, you know, they know more about you in many cases than you know about yourself. You know, your services do in scary ways in many cases too. Textual computing is really one of those trends that's gaining a lot of momentum. It's probably one of the biggest things to watch in 2014. It's empowered by the cloud, and it feeds into all of the decentralization that Ed's talking about, where, you know, your devices, you don't need this sort of one device that's the hub of everything anymore. I mean, those days are gone.
I remember asking Paul Otellini, who was at the time still chairman of Intel, CEO of Intel, and this was years ago, but it was already becoming clear that the PC was going to take a backseat to something in the post-PC era. And he said, no, we'll always have a PC as a central hub. This is Intel's hope. And it hasn't really worked out so well for Intel. Yeah. But on the other hand, I would point out that these trends don't happen over a year. They happen over a decade. And so we saw tablets at CES and before that Comdex for 10 years before they happened. We saw convergence. How long was convergence the watchword before it even got close? So I think you're right. I think wearables is a watchword. I think distributed computing, internet everywhere, the internet of things. These are all watchwords, but they don't happen over a year. They happen over decades.
Yeah, right? True. Well, some of it's you know, at least CES, it's kind of a test to see where are people at on these things. Even to smaller, simple level, I look at like wireless charging, right? There's kind of a bunch of competing standards, but it's actually gotten remarkably better this year. Still got lots of problems.
I agree. I just put first of all, last year, all the wireless chargers were junky. You had to position them carefully. And the Google made one for the Nexus that it slid off of.
The phone always slid off.
It just would slide off. It was like, how could you sell this? This slides off of it. It doesn't stay on it. So, but I have, if you'd bring me my Slope, because I just got something that actually works. And then here's the funny thing. So this is a Galaxy Note 3, which does not have wireless charging. But for $8, I was able to get a little thin wafer-sized thing that supports Qi charging. I put it on the contacts here in the Galaxy Note 3. Can you get it over the shoulder, Anthony? Are you working on that? I see you feverishly pressing buttons.
I think the camera's off, so.
Oh, man. Well, anyway, I put it in the actually, it's so thin, it just goes right on top of the battery. The case still goes on. And now I can do there it is. Thank you.
There it is.
So this is this was $8 on Amazon. It's that thin. NFC still works. I thought this was kind of amazing. And I'm not a big fan of wireless because all the chargers I've used are like that Google charger until I found this. This is called the Tilt. It's from...
The Tilt. Love that. I actually have one at the office.
It works!
It's beautiful. And it's even got the... You know what the key is on this? It's so dumb. It's ridiculous. But on the bottom of that thing, it's got the light that tells you if it's lined up or not.
Because positioning is so tricky. Positioning is so tricky on this.
It almost always lines up. I've actually very rarely – I put other phones on it just to see what's going to happen.
No,
sometimes.
It works with an Nexus 7. It works with an Nexus 5. And now that I put this little thing on the back – so you're right. That's the kind of thing that you find at CES that you go, wow.
Okay, this has made some real big steps forward, right? And that's kind of this year's
But isn't Qi – this is Qi charging. Is Qi going to be the standard?
I don't know. I mean,
see, this will piss me off if it's not the standard. I'm pissed.
In many cases, the decision for what becomes or the external factors that go into what becomes a standard are not dictated by technical excellence or industry consensus.
Boy, do we know that?
It's who wins.
Right. We do know that.
What's Nokia using? Ed, I can't remember. It's a difference.
Nokia's Qi. No, Nokia's Qi.
Nokia's using Qi.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they're the they really kind of started this with a little pillow and all the different chargers. And I and but Google has jumped on the Qi bandwagon as well. I'm thinking Qi Qi will be the standard going forward.
Yeah, and people at first one of those tilt.
People often say, and I kind of agree with them. What's the problem? You just plug the dang thing in, and you know it's connected. You know it's charging as fast as possible. But the convenience of having a little stand that this is actually something you can use the phone and so forth, and it's charging is really kind of nice. So
yeah,
I like.
Once you do it, it's like it's kind of like that fingerprint scanner or something, you know. Too once you start using something, of course that right. That device does not use the Qi standard.
And Apple will never, of course, use wireless, and so that'll be the end of that. Ladies and gentlemen, we are going to take a break. I've been trying to do this ad for 15 minutes, but you guys keep saying interesting things. Would you knock it off? More about CES, the future. We'll talk about Apple finally getting into China in a big way and a lot more. We got a great cast. Ed Bott is here. Jason Heiner from the Tech Republic and CBS Interactive. And my friend Patrick Beja, who does – do you do any English language podcasts at all now?
Not anymore.
So if you don't speak French, this is a lousy plug.
You know, you get a chance to learn.
Yes. That's right. So Phileas Club gone.
Phileas Club gone. Movielicious gone.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
You know what?
Do your ad, Leo. Do your ad.
I know. I could go on and on. By the way, Tilt, this is Tilt. I shouldn't really mention something like this without telling you. It's TYLT.com. They make a lot of other silly stuff. But the View wireless charger, which comes in a variety of colors, I actually bought two of them. It's not cheap. I think it's, what, $60? But it actually works, and it's got a sensible angle. It just kind of has a good idea. All right, moving on. Our ads today, our sponsor today is personalcapital.com. This is an interesting story. I interviewed the founder of Personal Capital a year ago on Triangulation. He was formerly CEO of PayPal, CEO of Intuit, a guy who knew a lot about money. And we had some really interesting conversations. And actually, that's when I signed up for Personal Capital a year ago. Personal Capital is free. It gives you a financial dashboard, all your accounts in a single place, and it helps you invest. It's really, the idea is it's not a checkbook manager. This is a wealth manager. And the irony of all of this is that as you progress in your financial life, the more progress you make, the more difficult it is to invest well, to use your money wisely. Personal Capital helps you keep track of the checking account, the savings account, the retirement account, credit cards, investments, mortgages, loans, all those things that really can put you in a financial fog, the fog of finance. You can't make great decisions when you only see the puzzle a piece at a time. This gives you complete intel with graphs, charts, and reports. It's like a financial GPS at your fingertips, and it's free when you go to personalcapital.com/twit. It'll just take a few minutes to sign up, and it will pay big dividends. They will help you make the most of your assets. And you might say, I'm too young to invest. This is the best time to invest. I wish I had been putting money into my 401k when I was 25. This is the best time to invest. Whenever, you know. PersonalCapital.com/twit. I don't think they'll put you in Dogecoins, but you never know. Maybe put a small amount in Dogecoins, just in case. PersonalCapital.com/twit. We thank you for your support. You're watching Twit This Week in Tech, last episode of 2013. Biggest story of the year, Ed Bott. I know that you got the most clicks on the Oracle crapware story, and rightly so. It was a mind bender. But the biggest story has to be the NSA.
So the NSA story was also on my list of the top five stories of the year. I thought what was interesting is, I mean, there's no question that that the Snowden revelations are important and big. What I thought, the story that I wrote way back in early July, I think, or late June, when this first started happening, it sort of bookmarked the year for me. I wrote a story about how terrible that first story on the NSA leaks was. It was the one about Prism, and it was the one that said that the NSA had direct access to all of these things. And the Washington Post actually said that all of these tech companies, Google, Apple, Microsoft, Yahoo, were knowingly participating with the NSA in this. And we now know, of course, that they were as much victims as everyone else.
They're hopping mad. They met with President Obama last week to yell at him.
Yeah, so I think it started with, there's been a lot of sloppy journalism, and it's, so it's sort of fitting that the year ended with 60 Minutes doing one of the sloppiest, most horrible pieces of journalism. Jason and I both work for sites that are owned by CBS Interactive. Full disclosure, you know, 60 Minutes is part of the parent corporation that pays me most of my income during the year, but that was just a terrible story. There's been a lot of sloppy journalism around the whole NSA story this year, unfortunately.
That you actually say the story is not the NSA. The story is the NSA and bad journalism.
Yeah, that was, I think, the case back then.
Yeah.
I think it's the story. I think the story is Snowden, you know, himself and going out on a limb and doing what he did. Interestingly enough, it's come out that he was able to do all of this. There's a bit of an IT story in this as well. He's able to do all of this because of sort of bad configuration inside the NSA. There was a SharePoint server, and he was able to use that to get all these documents that he shouldn't have had access to.
I didn't know this. Wait a minute. This is interesting. So Microsoft SharePoint, which is designed really as a way to share documents among coworkers, was the security misconfigured? Is that why he was able to get in?
That's my understanding. This is a story that just came out this week in terms of how he got that.
It's a slight refinement of that. He was set up as a global administrator of it, is my understanding.
True. Actually, that's right.
So he had legitimate access, but they shouldn't have given him that kind of access.
Yes.
As well.
Yeah, they basically, instead of giving him a key to the file cabinet, they gave him the master key to every door in the building.
And he wasn't even an employee. He was a contractor.
Yes. Well, that's the other part of this story this year. Really, to me, the far more important part of this is that we have outsourced so much of the United States government, military establishment, and spying in general to contractors.
Yeah, and the NSA is primarily contractors. It's a lot of contractors that run the NSA.
In the 60 Minutes story, we bring in high schoolers to do cryptanalysis. What the hell was the point of that? I'm just curious what because the whole thing was obviously carefully crafted by the NSA to paint a certain picture. Why do they mention the high schoolers? Because the young people today should be working for the NSA? I don't understand that one.
Maybe everybody assumes they're the smartest one.
That's kind of what they said.
That's kind of what they were getting at.
I think what they were trying to say was that they were open to
the young people. We love the young people. They're the future.
Yeah.
Can I just get back to the sloppy journalism part for one quick second? Just to remind the fact that when this story first broke, we didn't know everything we know now. And Ed, when you're saying that people said, I guess it's Greenwald, said that Microsoft and Google and everyone was participating willingly, maybe not willingly, but we're giving away our information. That's what we believed at the time. And it took a lot of analysis and thinking and brain racking to figure out what PRISM actually was. And I guess... It was on Security Now.
Steve
was
Gibson.
The first time we heard.
Yeah, right, so that's my takeaway was that this PRISM slide was the piece of evidence. Right. What happened was non-technical journalists looked at it and said, "Oh, Microsoft and Google and Yahoo are cooperating." Steve Gibson, who sat back and said, "No, that's not necessarily what's happening. I think that they're doing something we now know is the case called upstreaming." Which was that they were intercepting. They did not, although it was unclear because it did sound like from the slide there that there was a NSA presence within the servers of these companies.
And it did take a lot of people thinking about this for, you know, it was a few days, maybe even a couple of weeks before we finally figured out what it probably was.
Right.
So I think it's a little bit unfair to say that the journalism was sloppy at the beginning.
Patrick, I think you need to read what I wrote there because I think you're misinterpreting it based on, you know, 140 character summary.
But the story,
there's two things about the story. Number one, the Washington Post and the Guardian were in competition to break the story, and so they both wound up running it before they had done what a journalist is supposed to do, which is to figure out stuff like that.
Right.
Two, they said things as though they were fact.
Right.
When they didn't have the documentation to support them as fact,
right.
Or even, frankly, as speculation. And three, one thing that the Washington Post did was they printed one story that was picked up by literally thousands of other journalistic outlets and sent all over the world. And then they rewrote the story so that by the next day, the thing that they had online did not even resemble the thing that they published originally that everyone picked up. Those I think are pretty cardinal sins of journalism.
Modern journalism, though, seems to be get the story out and then fix it over time. Doesn't that seem to be the way it's all done?
Process journalism. I know this is a tech show, not a journalism show, but you know, a lot of it is the downward pressure on journalism. I mean, journalist organizations are thinner than ever. We have fewer fact checkers. We have fewer copy editors. We have fewer, you know, what we used to call review editors that are doing this kind of thing. You know, the news cycle is much shorter. News cycle used to be about 3 days. You know, now it's about 3 hours. So it's tough. I'm not defending journalists because Ed's exactly right. Journalists dropped the ball. I mean, I agree on a lot of this stuff at the beginning, and we don't know what we know now, and hindsight is 2020, but clearly people didn't corroborate facts. They made leaps that they shouldn't have. And, you know, this story has kind of been botched all year long. Again and again and again.
You know, I'm proud of the fact that thanks to Steve Gibson, our coverage of this has been the most accurate and has proven to be the most accurate from day one. And it's one of the things that I've decided to really beef up our news coverage because I feel that somebody's got to do a better job of tech news coverage.
I agree. It's true. We have actually purposefully on Tech Republic, we've purposefully not covered it many times because we couldn't verify a lot of stuff. There was so much crap being said both ways. You know, you try to verify it and you get stonewalled. You know, we actually haven't published much about it for that reason. And you know, that's not really the answer either, honestly. And we're trying to figure out
we're hiring people. We're trying to do a better job. I feel like we need to step up and try it anyway.
We are too. Doing better.
I think I'm the only one who's not an actual journalist here, so I'm sorry if I'm being, I think you're being a little bit harsh on at the very beginning of the story. Could they even, and maybe I don't know, but could they even have verified all of this? Were there ways to actually, I mean, this is very, very serious and complicated and secret and dangerous stuff, quite frankly. I mean, Snowden, had the story not been leaked, would probably have ended up in a ditch. I'm not saying you're wrong. You're wrong. Obviously, I have no business saying this, but I just think the way you're presenting this is a little bit harsh.
Well, again, I think maybe you should read what I wrote, because I don't think it's harsh. I think it's accurate. I think there's a debate that needs to happen in this country. I was furious about the Patriot Act when it was introduced in 2001 and 2002 and rushed into law. And I wrote stuff about this in 2004 and 2005. To me, a lot of what has come out about the NSA is simply the details that they were doing exactly what they thought, what we thought they were doing. What I'd like to see us have now is a really robust national debate, especially with the legislators who have been falling down on the job of overseeing this kind of surveillance. And the only way that you can have that debate is by putting accurate information in front of the people. Now, Glenn Greenwald and Bart Gellman and Laura Poitras and all the people who've been involved in this have been publishing lots of facts and things that the American people deserve to see. And I have no problem with that. The problem that I have is on the frequent occasions when they have jumped to conclusions that weren't justified by the things that they were printing. And as a result, people who only read a fraction of the news reports anyway, come into the debate with a set of beliefs that aren't supported by the facts. And that, to me, it's an overreach. And a lot of the overreach comes because the people who are writing this are also trying to be advocates. And when you're an advocate, sometimes you start editorializing beyond where the facts take you.
And it's the world of journalism has changed to that. It has become that, you know, advocacy journalism. It's an interesting issue. We're going to move on. The other stories that you highlighted, it's very interesting. As somebody who covers Microsoft, this was a year for Microsoft news, like crazy Microsoft news.
Yep.
Starting with Windows 8, 8.1, Ballmer quitting, the search for CEO, the Surface, Microsoft getting into hardware for the first time ever. I mean, I just go on and on and on. It was an amazing year of change at Microsoft.
Office 365 as a subscription service for what had been a conventional piece of software, one of the single most popular piece of software in the world, is now a subscription service.
Yep. Something Microsoft wanted to do for years, but finally did. And it probably means Windows will be next. And the Xbox One, the PlayStation 4, I guess, but the Xbox One's a big one for Microsoft, too. Who's going to be the next CEO of Microsoft, Ed Bott? You know. I know you know.
I don't. If I had to guess, I would say that, I think the two front runners right now are Alan Mulally from Ford and Satya Nadella, who's the internal candidate. If I had to guess, I think that it's going to be a very typical Microsoft solution where Mulally will become the CEO and Satya will be the CTO in a role that Microsoft hasn't had a CTO since Ray Ozzie left. And so this will allow them to have the technical leadership without Satya having to take all the bullets that would come with also being CEO. That's my guess.
Is Microsoft manageable, though?
Sure it is.
Is it?
It's being very well managed.
Such a hairball.
From a business point of view.
There's so many divisions.
Yeah.
And right now, divisions fighting with each other, although that seems to have...
That's always been the case.
Right. But makes it hard to manage.
Yep. Does.
Yeah.
That's kind of what the whole one Microsoft thing is about.
A devices and services company.
Well, yeah, but the tech industry today, as we were talking about, is a devices and services world.
Right. That's a good point. That's not just a stretch to say that, is it? That's what we are all doing. Yeah.
I mean, I think that there may be the fact that it's that we're still waiting on it and that they've kind of pushed it till
they say it won't be till next year now.
Early next year, I think, makes me think that there's probably there's something going on in the back room that maybe they didn't expect. I mean, they released all this sort of Ballmer stuff in December. They were teeing this up for it to happen.
That's why Ballmer gave Mary Jo Foley and others exclusive interviews? Do you think that's why?
I don't know. I don't know, but that's the logical conclusion you would come to, right?
Yeah.
Is that, you know, you do that because you're teeing this up to to say goodbye to him, and you do that for a couple of days, and then a couple of days later you announce the new CEO. That's
right.
That's typically the way you would do it, and most of the vibe throughout the year was like this was going to happen by the end of the year.
Is this a good time if you're making an announcement and you want attention? Is this a good time? It seems like not.
You don't have much to compete with. I mean, you can argue it both ways, right? There's not much to compete
with.
There's
no other news.
There's not much news, right? So you're going to get all the spotlight. But at the same time, people are distracted.
But is anybody paying attention? Right.
Right. Exactly.
You get coverage, but is anybody reading the newspaper?
Yeah, so you can argue both sides of that. Yeah. Beginning of the year is really tough time to announce it. You're competing with CES. You're also going to have product news that people are revving up to go at the beginning of the year as well. So, you can argue it both ways. I do think the future of Microsoft, and I've said this and written this many times, I think the future of Microsoft is primarily it's a cloud company. I mean, if you look at there's a lot of things there's some obviously key mistakes that Ballmer made. Missing the mobile revolution is the big one. I mean, Microsoft had a huge lead in tablets and smartphones that he completely you know, spent. It's not all his fault. He's not the one running product for those things, but you know, you have to take responsibility for it. But what he did get right and doesn't get as much credit for, and should, is the fact that he was investing, you know, in enterprise and in cloud in a big way, and really turned them into a powerhouse in both of those areas. Things that don't get talked about much, but Microsoft still has a lot of trust in enterprise. Despite things like this SharePoint kerfuffle with the Snowden thing.
Wasn't Microsoft's fault.
It's not really Microsoft's fault if they misconfigured it, right? And in the cloud, I mean, Azure has a potential to be one of the winners. Azure works well with Linux. It works well with other platforms. It scales in really big ways. And so, you know, those two things, my sense is, 5 or 10 years from now, Microsoft may not be a household brand in the same way. It may not in the same way it is. That's kind of up in the air. But I think it's still going to be a powerhouse in the computing world, the same way kind of Oracle and IBM and other companies are, because they've got a ton of momentum for that behind the scenes stuff.
You know, there's a big opportunity for them. This company BlackBerry, I think it's falling apart. Maybe there's an opportunity there. BlackBerry announces $4.4 billion quarterly loss. You got to be a big company to lose $4.5 billion in 3 months.
Yeah. That's almost.
Somebody called the radio show today and asked me, so is it over for BlackBerry? Should I not buy a BlackBerry? And I said, no, you should not buy a BlackBerry. Is that premature? Is it over for BlackBerry?
I mean, how many times can we call it?
It's a slow, lingering death.
We've been calling it for too long to even imagine. Yeah,
it's just a flesh wound.
Not dead yet.
Well, the BlackBerry OS 10 was their last hurrah.
And the Z10 was supposed to be the phone, right? This is going to save us.
Yeah, if anything was going to save them, that was going to be it. And obviously, well, maybe it's still too early, but obviously it didn't. So I don't see how they can come back from it. There have been rumors about them making cheap entry level phones with Foxconn. I don't see how that will help them all that much. Microsoft, I mean, Windows Phone is now the third in market share, in third place. I don't see BlackBerry coming back from it. They could. But
John Chen, the new, he was interim CEO. He's now said, no, I'm the CEO because I think nobody else wanted the job. Sent an email to BlackBerry staffers saying, you know, relax, enjoy Christmas. It's going to be... It's going to be a nice Christmas. He says, my step one was to have the company financially out of harm's way. Can't say I've done it today, but we're on a good path. He says 2014 will be an investment year. He hopes to be cash flow neutral, in other words, not hemorrhaging money, by 2015 and actually profitable in 2016. Not sure how you do that. It ain't with phones.
They're going to get rid of a lot more people. Yeah. They're going to be getting rid of a lot more people, right?
Yeah.
They've gotten rid of a lot.
Somebody observed that because Ottawa, the Canadian government, is very reluctant to let BlackBerry be sold to China, which is one out. They couldn't find a buyer. That this Foxconn deal is really a backdoor to a Chinese ownership. That Foxconn will be building, selling, even stocking the phones, presumably sending some money back to Canada. But it sounds like Foxconn is, in effect, taking over.
Foxconn's the Samsung, I think, of 5 or 10 years ago, right? Not actually, probably a little longer than that. But, remember Samsung used to white box, HTC used to white box. They used to make a lot of devices for everybody else.
Right.
And you do that long enough and you get enough experience making devices and you go, we can make our own devices. Let's just do this, right? I mean, you have to expect that Foxconn at some point is going to try to say, you know what, let's make our own brand. But whether it's Foxconn or they may buy a brand or they may, just put it under a different brand, whatever, at some point they're going to do their own brand. I would be shocked if they didn't do that.
Or make it kind of take over manufacture and sales for BlackBerry.
Could be, but it's low margin. You know, that stuff's low margin. Eventually, right. You say, you know what, if we could use it, we put our
why aren't we making an iPhone? Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And you, that's where all the high margin, that's where the big money is. Eventually, yeah, you know, that's what you decide you want to do.
We had a chatter who works for the Canadian government today who said that Canadian, do they call them legislators? I don't know what they call them. Lords have been told, have been offered Blackberries for the year, but as a, but they're also going to be offered iPhones come well, spring.
So I think Patrick's right that the BlackBerry 10 was their big bet and it flopped. When you read, I read through the reports this week, and I think 70 or 80% of the devices they sold this year were BlackBerry 7.
Wow!
Yeah, yeah, it was some, you know. So they really didn't, their new operating system failed, but the strength that they have is in enterprise device management and patents. They have a lot of patents for enterprise management. So ultimately, they may wind up doing something like Nokia did, which is to say, we'll sell our hardware division to somebody like Foxconn, and will become a smaller company focused on network services.
Right.
They, you know, and they could, with all their expertise and their ability to protect some of that expertise with patents, they could actually survive in that field. But as Jason points out correctly, that would be with far fewer people than they have today.
Dvorak taught me that lesson because years ago I said, it's over for IBM. He said, no, it's never going to be over for IBM. They have patents. And that's
more patents. For like 18 consecutive years, they've filed more patents than anybody else. It's a remarkably, IBM's a remarkably innovative company. Yeah. People do compare lots of companies to IBM, and every time they do, I'm like, well, they're not as innovative as IBM.
Isn't
IBM
that interesting?
Actually does research.
You don't think of them that way, but of course they do. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hope you're enjoying our end of year episode next week, best of. And then the week following, a brand new year for This Week in Tech. I appreciate your being here all through the years. This is our eighth year. We'll be entering our ninth year next year doing this. So we're almost as, we've been doing this almost as long as Ed Bott's been blogging.
About the same time.
Yeah. And I still don't wear pants. So there.
It's Here's your tinfoil hat.
Thank you. I want the tin. We do it thanks to our great sponsors who make this possible, always free, because we are ad-supported. I kind of, you know, made that choice early on with Twit for a while. We thought maybe we would be a paid service or we'd take donations. But I think, you know what, Mike Elgin's convinced me of this. He said the idea of making this free, so it's ultimately democratic, so everybody gets to watch as many eyeballs as possible, and then hand-picking great advertisers, just a handful of them, to bring them to you. That seems to work out pretty well. One of those advertisers has been with us for a long time, 4 years, 5 years now, squarespace.com. The best hosting plus the best software on top of that to give you a website that is just fantastic. Never goes down, always beautiful, mobile responsive now with their new designs, and they have so many great templates. In fact, if you go to squarespace.com and click Get Started, you get to pick a template. For 2 weeks, you can use Squarespace at no cost. You don't even have to give them a credit card. Play with the different templates. The beauty of this is the way Squarespace is designed, your content is completely independent. This is how it should be of the template. So you pick a lovely template like Front Row, import your content. And then if you say, hey, you want to try a different one, you just press a button and everything's reflowed to fit into the new template. Every Squarespace site looks different because it's so easy to completely customize it using click and drag and point and click. And if you know JavaScript, they've got a great developer's platform, but you don't have to use it. All of the templates, every one of them, is mobile responsive. That means the site looks great no matter what size screen. From iPhone to 32-inch 4K display, your site will resize and reflow to always look at its best. That's nice, too, because if you're using Squarespace Commerce, it means you've got both mobile and desktop commerce all inclusive. You got to try it. 2 weeks free. Visit squarespace.com. If you decide to buy, the pricing is great. Starts as low as $8 a month. Probably you're going to want to go with the most popular plan. That's the unlimited plan. $16 a month when you buy the annual plan. That's unlimited pages, unlimited galleries, unlimited blogs, unlimited bandwidth. You'll never get a bandwidth bill. You could be the most popular site on the internet. No problem. No cost. No additional cost. Unlimited contributors. They have that great developer platform with the color-coded syntax editor and all that. Custom domain name is free. They'll hook it all up for you when you buy an annual plan. And, of course, the best support in the business. They've won this year. They won a Stevie Award for outstanding service, a golden Stevie. If you want to sell, actually, you know, probably it's not too late. You could probably start a commerce site. You could do it so quickly. You could probably start an e-commerce site today for the holidays. You'd be like, you'd have to get the word out. $24 a month. No transaction fees. They will, if you need to, they'll set you up with a merchant account. I think they, who's their provider? I can't remember the name. But you do also get unlimited physical, digital, and service products. They will help you with inventory tracking, with tax, shipping calculations. You can do coupon controls. It is fabulous. I want you to visit them, squarespace.com. Try them out for free. If you decide to buy, the one favor I'd like to ask, use our offer code TWIT12 for the 12th month, right? TWIT12. That'll give you 10% off your new site. And it's just our way of saying thank you for mentioning that you heard it on Twit. TWIT12 at squarespace.com. But it's free to try. No credit card needed or anything like that. Tom Merritt is here. What? Say, go ahead.
Sorry, I was going to say, I found out about Squarespace from Twit.
Thank you.
And I've been using it for 4 or 5 years. And I mean, it sort of changed the game for me, having to worry about bandwidth and also design.
What's you know, your, I used to have design. You're not talking about Tech Republic. What site designers. Is it? What site Twit. Are you talking about?
Yeah, sorry. My personal site, jasonhiner.com.
JASONHINER.com. I want to check you out on the Squarespace. Oh, look at that. Nice boy in a little cap there. Journalist, editor, world citizen. I love it. Yeah, and it never goes down. You never have to worry about bandwidth. Thank you for the unsolicited testimonial, Jason Heiner. I appreciate it. I was about to say Tom Merritt is here with a look. I don't think it's going to be a very busy week, but let's get a look at the week ahead, Tom.
Hey, thanks, Leo. Not much in the week ahead. In fact, not much really going to happen until CES. But I just want to say on behalf of everybody at Tech News Today, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, Happy Festivus. We'll see you December 30th.
We've got our aluminum pole right here celebrating. Celebrating Festivus.
There's going to be an airing of grievances coming shortly.
Yes, the feats of strength and the airing of grievances just around the corner on this show. Ed Bott is here from ZDNet. I didn't even put two and two together. Got two CBS guys on. Didn't even know. Jason Heiner, CBS Interactive Tech Republic. That's just because they own everything but Twit at this point, basically.
And so if you want to really... Yeah. Do this. I used to write for Tech Republic back in from 1999 to 2001 or something like that, right? Microsoft Challenge, and if your question got answered, or if you answered my question, I forget which one it was, you got tech points.
And what are those tech points worth today, Ed Bott?
Exactly. In terms of flus.
You have your flus account and your tech points account, and I've got my Flatter account, so we're all set. Also here, Patrick Beja, not Patrick on Twitter. Don't understand that.
That is me.
That is him. Did you order your Mac Pro, not Patrick?
No, who needs a Mac Pro, honestly? It's if you're not a video editor or, you know, computer graphics artist, you're doing it just to...
But it's so pretty.
Yeah, exactly.
Although I wish I could get a red one.
I'm sure you can paint it red.
I could just paint it, huh? So the Mac Pro went on sale this week we weren't sure when, at midnight, I think. If you didn't order it in the first few minutes, you're out of luck. You won't be able to get it till February. Apparently, it was available for December 31st, at least for a little while. But you had to be up at midnight and so forth. I was going to order one, but I don't want to wait till February. So what I'm going to do, my new plan is to go down to the Apple store on December 31st and hope they get one or two that I can buy on the spot. Some journalists did get them for review. I know Jason Snell was tweeting. He said his is very quiet, but when you put your face next to the top, you get a nice bath of warm air coming out of the thing. Ike Molly Wood got one. Not sure who else. I don't know if she's going to drop it out of an airplane. She's famous for her torture tests. But no Mac Pro for us.
Do you think
the out of stock status coming so fast. Do you think that's because they're assembled in the US and that has anything to do with it, or?
That's a very good question. It's a couple of possibilities. It may be that there are very few of them. It may be that there's been so much demand. Remember, they haven't updated the Mac Pro for 3 years. That they might have sold 10,000. We don't know in the first few hours. I don't know. It does seem more likely that it is a challenging manufacture process. Remember, they announced this in June and said sometime before the end of the year. I have a feeling it's hard to make. The extruded aluminum is not, I'm told. Apparently, that's a well-known technology. So I don't know. That's a good question. Any thoughts, anybody? Why the short supply on the Mac Pro?
I don't think it's a question of super high demand. I don't think that there's, I mean, I think there's a very passionate cohort of designers who want that. But I don't think that it's one of those things where lots and lots and lots of people are buying it. I think it's just it's going to be a niche product. And Apple doesn't really lose anything by not being able to fulfill the orders for that right away.
That's true. You were saying, Jason?
Yeah, I was just saying, I don't think they made that many. They're expecting this to be a high-end market. I think they would prefer not to make the product, honestly. But, because they're really looking for markets of scale. But it would be a bad PR move not to do it. So I think they figured they do it. They can keep some PR by doing it. They can innovate a little bit on manufacturing, and that's probably a smart thing. I sort of wonder how passionate they really are about it. The fact that they let the old one lag for as long as they did, I think shows that they were really on the fence about whether they wanted to play in this market anymore or not.
It's only $3,000 starting point, although it's easy to get it up to almost $10,000 with just a couple of clicks of the mouse. So it is a specialty computer for the pro audience that Apple has long ago abandoned, frankly.
Yeah, agree.
That's pretty, though.
Very.
Yeah.
But we were thinking they might, as Jason was saying, they might abandon it for years, actually. But I really don't think there's a market for it anymore, even.
There's a market. Saying, I'll give you an example. We do our video editing on high-end Mac Pros, and we've been watching what's happening. And once they announced this, I decided we're going to move to Windows because we need to be able to buy late model, relatively affordable machines. The Final Cut Pro 10 is unusable for us for a variety of technical reasons. They abandoned our market, so we're going to buy Windows and Premiere. It kills me. I'm a Mac fan, but that's what we're going to use because it only makes sense. And I think that there is a market for that, and I think they've abandoned it. It may not be an important market.
Sure. No, but I mean, even power-wise, a while ago, you would have had, 5 years ago even, you would have had a lot of people who would have wanted a Mac Pro. Today, you can do pretty much everything except for high-end video editing and computer graphics calculations.
That's true. On a laptop.
On a laptop.
The Retina is as powerful as my Mac Pro from 3 years ago.
So
more powerful.
Yeah, probably is.
So, Leo, Apple abandoned you the day that they removed the word computer from the company name.
That's about the right timing,
I mean, that's seriously, because that's the point where they said, we are in the business of building of building high-margin consumer devices.
And that's what Microsoft wants to do, right?
For some unknown reason, God.
For some categories, but Microsoft makes more roughly 60% of its both its revenue and its profits from enterprise services and software today. So I don't think that's entirely true. They would like to be considered seriously as a maker of consumer goods that people are passionate about, because there's money to be made there. But it also has a halo effect that bleeds back into the enterprise side.
Who's going to make the truck? We still need trucks, don't we? I mean, Steve Jobs said, there's still people going to need trucks, but most people want an iPad. We'll just want a little device. Who's going to make the trucks? Because there is some market. I'm a market for trucks.
Well, there's an interesting. So the interesting thing is it was a beautiful piece of Steve Jobs sophistry there, where he took a complicated question and turned it into a dichotomy. And the reality is now that we have a world where we have trucks and we have luxury cars and we have minivans and we have smart cars and skateboards and bicycles and motorcycles and everything. And lots of people have multiple examples of those things. So the idea that you had to choose between one of those was the great distraction.
He was brilliant.
It was the thing he did better than anything else.
He just sliced it.
Yeah. The Ford truck is the best-selling vehicle in the world for 35 years in a row. So the fact that you know, it used the truck, that's why that I sort of did the double take when he did that one. Like, I understand the analogy, and to an extent it works, but it's sort of funny is that, you know, the 35 years in a row, that's the best-selling vehicle in the world. But it's also used for work in the same way. It actually is pretty decent analogy to the way people work, because when you want to get real work done, people still use they still, by and large, especially knowledge workers, sit down and use a computer. The thing is why that market has been battered is that people were using computers, including laptops, for so many other things too. They were buying for this period before really the iPhone and Android kind of hit. People were buying a lot of second computers because they were being connected more. And they were, so that market, you could say it kind of was almost artificially inflated as people were buying these second PCs, netbooks, things like this. What happened is once those second devices came, that market just dropped out. Nobody was buying, you know, netbooks. Nobody, you know, very rarely were buying second laptops anymore to keep, you know, a cheap one up, you know, on the upstairs in the bedroom or whatever. Buy one and give to your kid. By and large, they started buying these small devices. So, you know, a lot of it looks really bad for the PC right now, but essentially it's what I would think of as more of the normalization of that market, to where the people who really need those devices, you know, that's what they're getting. They're still using those for work. They also last a lot longer than your typical, you know, mobile device. And so it's still a solid market. It's just a lot smaller than it was before it kind of got artificially inflated by all this kind of second PC netbook stuff.
And this year, Apple will be celebrating Chinese New Year by finally selling the iPhone on China Mobile, China's biggest network. They announced the deal today. You'll be able to pre-order Christmas Day 2013, and they'll be available January 17th. It's both the 5S and the 5C. And it's interesting that Tim Cook, in his statement, one of the first words out of his mouth is enormous respect for China Mobile. We have enormous respect for China Mobile. This is, I mean, another big market opening up to Apple, and it's a market that has been dominated by, I think, by Android up to now, although the iPhone was always in great demand, just in short supply. So maybe they're making the right move. They're not. It's certainly selling Mac Pros isn't going to make much difference to the bottom line, I don't think.
No. Nokia had actually done pretty well in China as well.
Windows Phone is very successful.
Well, I'm talking about pre Windows Phone.
Right.
They had done very well. This is really, when you talk about the PC, PC Plus, post PC, whatever you want to talk about, a lot of it has to do with the growth being in emerging markets where people simply can't afford expensive devices,
right.
And so the challenge. So the interesting thing about bringing the iPhone 5S and 5C into China is that will appeal. There's a large enough group of people who have the money to buy that in China, but the really successful products there are going to be the really low cost ones, and that's the truth in Brazil and India as well.
Apple doesn't have anything in that category.
There's also power and connectivity problems, right, in emerging markets. And mobile is just so right, you know, in the right spot to solve a lot of those problems.
And if you have an unruly, emo Chinese teenager, he can be making movies while he's paying no attention to the family. This is the Apple ad misunderstood, which I've now seen on a couple of NFL games. They're spending a lot of money because this is a 90-second commercial. They actually have to buy 3 ad spots to air the whole thing. I think there is a cut down that they're showing as well. But it kind of speaks to anybody who's ever had teenagers. This kid is apparently ignoring everything that's going on. Grandpa even had to throw a sock at him at one point just to get him out of his stupor. And then, lo and behold, and I know tears are going to come to your eyes when you see this. Grandma certainly burst into tears. The little kid, the teenager, he's not been ignoring us. He's been secretly, just like the NSA, taping our every action. And has made a lovely movie out of it.
Oh, my.
Oh, my. Isn't that beautiful? So all those things that you saw looked like he was ignoring. He was really just recording it sideways. Somebody made it.
It's a...
Go ahead.
It's a beautiful ad, but the only difference with real life is that in real life, the kid is on Snapchat.
Yeah, he's actually not paying attention.
He's not making a movie.
This is what you want. This is what your fantasy is, not the reality of it. But that's what Christmas is all about here.
It's mom and dad and grandma who are going to pay for the iPhones anyway.
That's right. Exactly. That's who's buying it.
That's who the commercial
is. And if Chad wants to play Snapchat all day, well, we'll just have to live with it. Oh my. Yeah, they know how to pull the heartstrings. You're right. Apple's still a very, very good marketing company. No doubt about it. By the way, this
ad I think is I think I'm having technical problems.
Keep talking. We can hear you.
There's actually a couple of things about this ad that are kind of brilliant, or I think will be viewed as, and I think could be influential in the way people make ads. One of the things that they did, I think, was they didn't have these very. It's a very grungy, very interesting take on an ad. One, it's too long. And I mean this in the sense of they're breaking the rules, right?
Right.
They didn't get very sort of polished, good-looking people. It goes on way too long. It sort of sets us up to you know, look at this and sort of judge this person of like, here's this. Why are they, you know, putting this little jerk on here? That's all he's doing is ignoring his family.
Weenie.
And they're totally setting you up, right?
Right.
But they're setting you up to that part at the end where then you know they change your perspective. Oh, what he was actually doing was something creative, you know, using our tools, kind of thing. And so, but it breaks a lot of the rules of advertising, and ultimately it kind of succeeds in the fact of getting across that feeling, whether you believe in it or not. Like you said, a lot of kids are, when they're doing this, they are actually texting or doing something, you know, not so creative.
That's the first thing that comes into my mind is phony. This is a phony baloney ad, that this isn't really what's going on. That's what comes to my mind. Of course, then I think of the ad that made me cry most last year this time was the Clydesdale ad, the Budweiser ad with the little horse, and the guy raises the horse, and then the Budweiser guys take him, and then the horse breaks away and he kisses him, and that made me cry. So I'm an idiot. Who's better, Google or Apple, at making tear-jerking ads? Here is, it's not an ad, it's the What Did the World Search For in 2013, the Zeitgeist video from Google. But I got to say, this is the same exact spirit, same even sappy music. this is New Beginnings. They're touching every possible constituency here: gay marriage, the Pope, royalty lovers, sci-fi fans.
Our values call upon us to care about the
Democrats, Republicans, child throwers. Everybody is appealed to. Actually, I think it's a pretty good ad. And at least this isn't fake, right?
Well, it's the way you arrange things, isn't it?
Yeah. Good editing.
Yeah.
I have to say, I like how they end, not with people jumping out of a Jeep falling out of the air, or the World Cup, or even the Harlem Shake, or robots, but with the Make-A-Wish kid and
you finally get to that point of acceptance. There's nothing more
Batman. Gonna get to that.
Yeah, you know, it's beautiful, and it's really possible to be inspirational about this kind of stuff, but then you go and you look at the actual Zeitgeist list and you see that Miley Cyrus and Drake
didn't make it into that list. No Miley Cyrus. I don't understand it. Where's the Wrecking Ball? Here's Kit, the Batman kid. Love that. That's a great way to end.
Yeah.
But you're right. Yeah. Look at the list. It's not any of this.
Don't look at the list. Do not look at that list. You'll lose your.
What I thought was most interesting about the Google Zeitgeist list, and I'm glad they do it because it is meaningful and important, and they cross categorize it. What I think is most fascinating is that they do a U.S. version and a worldwide version,
right.
And it's really fascinating to see the differences between those two lists, and it makes me want to be a citizen of the world.
So top trending, well, I shouldn't use trending because that's more – that weights towards here's – let's see, people. Most searched people in the year 2013. The number one person searched for 2013, Miley Cyrus, then Drake, then Kim Kardashian, Justin Bieber, and Beyonce. Now, that's in the U.S. Let's quickly see just who were the most searched people in the world – worldwide, Nelson Mandela, Paul Walker, Malala, we saw her speaking to the UN, James Gandolfini, and then Miley Cyrus. So it just proves you French people have no interest in culture or twerking. Do people in France twerk?
Oh, God, I hope not.
It's called
Le Twerk.
I'm too old to go clubbing anymore. Actually, I never went clubbing, but I guess maybe they do. I really hope they don't, though. Miley Cyrus did get a little bit of airtime, though, even in France. So I have to be fair and say it's not like we ignored her.
The French Académie Française, which is responsible for preserving the integrity of the French language. Has decided that sexting is not a French word. They have decided that if you want to refer to sexting in France, tell me if this is true, Patrick, you have to use the word textopornographie.
Well, this is kind of true. That organization, venerable as it is, decides what new words are going to be introduced in the language. And actually, they have words for, you know, email and a ton of stuff. And they're not them, but we are actually fined if we use an English word in a French publication when there is a French equivalent.
This is so, more for legal documents, things like that.
No. It's even journalists should be using, of course,
textopornographie.
Yes.
That's too much words, too many syllables.
Yes. But when you say, you know, I'm sexting someone, or maybe someone else is sexting someone.
Yeah. I say that a lot.
You would say, I'm sending a sexto.
Ah.
Sexto would be a French word there.
Interesting.
So it's a lot shorter. It's a little bit
sexto.
Misrepresenting the.
I think we should all call them sextos. That sounds good. Other words approved by L'Académie Française General Commission on Terminology and Word Invention. Only in France would you have a commission on word invention. They approved accord prénuptial, which is prenuptial agreement, sur transposition, gold plating, vote nu, empty voting, and vidéo agression, which stands for happy slapping. That's a British...
I don't.
You don't know about happy slapping? Come on, man. It's the British term for what all the news channels think is a trend in the United States called the knockout game, which is, in fact, not a trend in the United States at all.
Oh, like do people slap each other happily?
Yes. We call it vidéo agression.
Oh, right. That, yes.
Happy
course.
Slapping is a better word, I think. Do you write LOL? Can you write LOL in France? Do people know what that means?
Yeah, of course.
That's a word.
Well, I don't know if it's a word, but we use it. But you know, France, the French language is regulated by this body, whereas the English language is regulated by nothing and evolves
and
with the
happens.
Usage. I guess
You see where we go wrong. We've got happy slapping.
What's happy slapping though? How does it have to do with?
It's something that the news channels have made up. The idea that, and they used to call it wilding. That gangs of teenagers are going around punching people and putting it on YouTube. There's no evidence that, in fact, this is happening.
Or that it is in any way happy.
Or that it deserves a term in the French lexicon. So Canada does the same thing. It's got the Office Québécois de la Langue Française. They have coined some words you might be interested in. Do not say, if you are in Quebec, do not say podcast. Say balado de fusion. Do not say chat. Say clavardage.
You know, the Canadian thing is really funny because they're so adamant about not using English words that they even translate things that we in France do not. They will translate movie titles and so sometimes we
I think it's a law. You have Canadian to. Right?
And it just sounds strange.
Instead of spam, they say pluriel. No more pluriel. And finally,
we use that as well. Actually.
Do you use pluriel? What does that mean? Yeah. I mean, what is the translation?
Pourri means rotten, and the courrier is mail, and courriel is email, and so you get to pourri and courriel, which is pourriel.
Rotten mail.
I lost half your audience.
No, I love that. That we should be using that. Rotten mail. I don't like rotten mail. Spam is not good. Spam is pork shoulder. It's delicious. And finally, this is from the CBC. No word yet on whether the French are developing a new term for the Oxford Dictionary Word of the Year, selfie.
I knew it. It's so funny. I was predicting that selfie was going to make it in. To somebody, I was just predicting selfie was going to make it into the Oxford Dictionary this year.
Selfie.
Totally proved me right.
Ugh. There is a jailbreak came out for iOS 7. Took them a while. This is from the group that does a lot of jailbreaking, Sorek. Evasion 7. However, Sorek, who runs Acidia, is a little concerned because it is no longer Cydia-based. Cydia was the, you know, so the whole point of jailbreaking when you jailbreak an iOS device is it's not rooting it. It's just so that you can use some store besides Apple's store. It's so sad. These poor people who are stuck with iPhones, they can only buy stuff from Apple. They're begging for a way out. So they run this jailbreak, and normally you'd get Cydia, which is Jay Freeman's Sorek's store. But this jailbreak, for some reason, goes to a secret Chinese app store. I'm thinking maybe not a good idea. I don't know.
But why do iPhone owners want to jailbreak their iPhones anymore? Android is so good now. A jailbroken iPhone is basically an Android. Why not, if you're so desperate for something more free, why not just get an Android? I don't really see the point at this stage.
The Evasion jailbreak apparently has an unofficial version of Cydia on it and a Chinese cracked app store known as Taig or Taig.
You could be stuck in contract, on an iPhone, or, you could have gotten – there's a lot of old iPhones still in circulation. Sometimes people have an older iPhone that, was a parents or relatives or friends or whatever, they upgraded, and so they give it away. So there's lots of reasons why people could have old iPhones and be using that as their device.
Seems to me if you buy into a gated community, it's kind of silly to tear the gate down. Right? I mean, isn't that why you will go to an iPhone? Because you want Apple to control what's on there? It turns out this Taig app store has a lot of pirated software on it. The Evasion team says they were approached by Taig to form a partnership, but they are now, quote, deeply sorry and embarrassed that they did this. So maybe there'll be a new version. It just makes me nervous. Go ahead, jailbreak if you want. I presume that if you're jailbreaking, you know what you're doing and,
Yeah, so the only reason that people jailbreak Android devices even is because they want to get away from the horrible layers of crud.
That's right.
That the provider, the carriers, have put on top of it. They just say, I just want,
this can be pure Android, please. Yeah, they want to change the ROM. They want to change the firmware. Because there's a checkbox in the settings that say you can buy from any store you want. I just started carrying a Note 3, which I love the hardware. But good Lord, between AT&T and Samsung, there's so much crap on here.
Oh, my gosh. And it's like that was for the S4. I loved the S4, but I had an AT&T S4. Had all kinds of crapware on it. Nexus 5 is not the hardware is uninspiring on the Nexus 5, but the fact that you can, you can do tethering on it, you can have a Google Wallet, you can do all kinds of, all the other stuff that you can't get because of all the crapware that is loaded on the S4. For that reason alone, I ditched the S4 and using a Nexus 5.
At least Android users can change the launcher. and use a launcher that doesn't look quite so janky. Looks more generic. Hey, congratulations to Nick Bilton. His book, Hatching Twitter, has been optioned for a TV show. I don't know what kind of TV show that would be.
A movie, I could understand.
Yeah.
A TV show is a little bit strange.
My guess when it says TV show is probably sort of miniseries-ish kind of thing, you know?
It'd be a great miniseries.
Yeah, exactly. You do it in eight parts, kind of like the BBC has sort of made a brilliant work of this, where you take a book and you turn it into an eight-part series. I think they tend to be, when books are adapted, I think they end up being much, much better when you do them that way than when you do them, try to crunch it into a two-hour movie, and then you sort of do composite characters and you do all kinds of other crazy stuff. I think it's a good book. I actually enjoyed it more than I thought. I thought it was written to be made into a television.
Nick's very visual. I asked him about that. I said, "So you feel it feels like you're kind of doing a lot of conversations that how could you have been privy to and so forth." But he said, "No, I got all this stuff, and it's pretty good. It's well worth reading." Speaking of which, I think Ed Bott, was it you who were manually retweeting?
Oh, you were asked to bring.
You're
that
in
up
trouble, today. Ed Bott. Tell us, what is manual retweeting, and why in heaven's name?
You know, somebody in Essex, England, I'm told, got very upset at me today because she had tweeted something that was actually pretty funny. The thing that she tweeted was, and remember, today is December 21st, right?
Yes.
So she said, "I'm so excited! Only 14 iPhone recharges till Christmas." And so I thought that was pretty funny. And so I put ha 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 at the front of that, and then RT, this woman's name, and then her joke. Well, she went ballistic. She just went completely nuts.
Well, because you did it wrong? You're tweeting it wrong?
And I don't even follow her, she said. How dare you manually retweet me when you don't even follow me?
Well.
I've just had I was at a complete loss. So I deleted it.
Well, you know.
I was looking for it. And, now you say no manual retweets ever again.
Yes. But you go ahead and click that YouTube clip if you want.
All right. Is this you explaining it all?
Oh, no. It's much better than that.
Oh, no wire hangers. Yeah. I'm not going to play that.
Yeah, you'd probably have to pay some royalties or something if you did that. But a very... very, very strange. So I actually went and looked it up, and there's Twitter support actually explains to you that you can do it this way, or you can do it this way if you want to add your commentary to it. So I think it was just somebody having a very bad day. And by the way, to Mark in Vancouver, Merry Christmas. So there. Got that out of the way.
the iPad and iPhone versions of Twitter allow you to do a manual retweet. There's the option. So I think it's allowed.
All of the mobile versions, right? Like I said, I was going to say flabbergasted, but I'll say I was gobsmacked by this exchange today in honor of the English origin of it. And so I looked all this stuff up. And on the mobile Twitter sites, you have the option to do either a straight retweet, boom, hit the RT button, and it goes out there under the original tweeter's name.
Which is confusing because it doesn't have the RT or anything. It's just weird.
Twitter users, it's weird.
Yeah.
For newcomers,
it's like the way it is.
It's normal. But on the web, on Twitter, on the web, there is no classic RT or manual RT or quoted RT option. You have to go through about five steps in the web version of Twitter to do a manual retweet and add your own commentary.
They don't want you to do it. Yeah. So there's a retweet. I'm looking at your tweet. No manual retweets. I can click the retweet button, but all I can do is press a button. I can't do anything like the old school. I could reply and copy and paste or something.
Yeah, I do this all the time. I pull out my phone and I end up using that to...
So frustrating.
To man, yeah. It is frustrating.
I copy and paste as well.
So what's wrong, Twitter? So, why won't you let us retweet?
You can also use TweetDeck on a PC or a Mac, and you'll get both the new option and the classic option.
Twitter is further going to break Twitter because apparently they're investigating the ability to edit past tweets.
But that's going to be time limited, though, if the rumors are true. It's for typos and things like that.
Oh, that's all right.
Yeah. It should be like 5 minutes and only for certain organizations.
And it's once per tweet.
Exactly. When you tweet something, you know, breaking news or something that's going to be retweeted a couple thousand times, you don't want to have the typo that makes your organization look like an idiot. So I can understand why they would do that. Yeah. And the reason they don't want you to manually retweet is that they want to be able to track how tweets travel. When you push the retweet button, it's still the same tweet.
Yeah,
when
and you so you broke that one, Ed, because you yeah. basically there was no way of them knowing that you had retweeted her.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
bad man.
I'm a bad person.
And terrible,
a terrible, terrible human being.
I just don't know how you live.
My dogs love me.
Let's take a break. When we come back, I just want to get just a look ahead maybe to CES and so forth, and then we can wrap things up. We've got a great panel here. Ed Bott, ZDNet.com/blog/Bott, B-O-T-T. 10 years, a blogger. And he still has the youthful, dewy, fresh complexion of a Chinese teenage girl. I don't know what I'm talking about. And then next to him, Patrick Beja, who, after smoking Galois and drinking Frenet Branca, really does look like he's a lot older than he really is. PatrickBeja.com.
And texto pornography.
Yes. You've been sextoing again. Do they drink Frenet in France, or is it just a hipster drink here in the San Francisco Bay Area?
Do they drink what?
I don't know. You see, I knew Frenet Branca.
It doesn't ring a bell.
Yeah, I thought so. Ladies and gentlemen, also, we've lost Jason Heiner. He's been coming and going the whole show. And I've been deftly avoiding showing that, but I blew it for you, Anthony. Sorry. Jason Heiner from Tech Republic. Our show today brought to you by Stamps.com. The last thing you want to do right now is go to the post office. Crowded, long, lots of people, the parking lot's full, because everybody's mailing stuff. I don't blame them. But if your business is mailing stuff, that's you don't want to go in there with all the amateurs in there. That's why you should be using Stamps.com. Makes your holiday mailings easy. If you mail flyers, invoices, packages, if you sell on Etsy or eBay, that kind of thing, you ought to know about Stamps.com. You print your own stamps and shipping labels. You don't need special ink. You don't need a special printer. You just need Stamps.com and your printer, your computer. They've got shipping solutions for everybody and a lot less expensive, a fraction of the cost of a postage meter. I want you to go to Stamps.com. By the way, the mail carrier will come get your mail. No matter what size the package, you do not have to go to the post office. There's nothing you can do at the post office that you can't do on Stamps.com, except maybe, I don't know, flirt with a clerk or something. But everything else you can do at your desk. Stamps.com offers discounts you can't get at the post office. Priority Mail, Priority Mail Express. They'll fill out all the forms automatically. The computer will print out the international mailing forms and all of that, taking that data from your customer's website on Etsy, eBay, PayPal, Amazon, your QuickBooks, that kind of thing. The whole point is it's going to save you a lot of time. It's going to save you a lot of money. And I got a good deal for you. If you go to Stamps.com right now, don't take that special Santa Claus offer on the front page there. No, click the radio microphone and enter our offer code TWIT just to let them know you heard about this on Twit. And they're going to turn that $80 value to $110 bonus value. You get $55 in free postage to use over the first few months of your Stamps account, a free digital scale, $5 supply kit, and, of course, a four-week trial of Stamps.com. Go there right now. Click the microphone, Stamps.com. Use the offer code TWIT. One of the things that supposedly we'll hear about is new plans for T-Mobile Uncarrier 4.0 at CES. I've been a little underwhelmed, but I love T-Mobile. But it's not exactly like they've eliminated any of the carrier stuff that they do, you know. So I'm curious. They apparently have done away with contracts. They've kind of done away with device subsidies. They have that Jump early upgrade program. What else is coming from T-Mobile? They say something you're not going to believe. Okay, well, I guess we won't be talking about that. What could it be? They sent out invitations.
No idea.
Are you going to go to the party at the January 8th?
No. I get dinner plans
tonight. Ed, you're not going to believe it. You won't believe it. They're going to show.
I'll be able to watch the entire thing on my smartphone.
This is why.
From dinner.
Why do you go to CES? Now the truth comes out. You're really just going because you get dinner and you get to meet your old friends and have some fun in Vegas.
You know, if you could see my CES schedule, it is.
Is it jammed?
Seriously, I think I'm probably going to walk 18 miles every day.
Wow.
That's how many meetings I have set up. So I'm working my tail off. At CES. So, and actually, having mobile devices has really made it possible for me to organize my CES schedule in a way that wasn't possible 5 years ago. Sort of fascinating.
Technology's catching up with CES, which is not the Consumer Electronics Show. It's just CES.
But T-Mobile is not on my... I don't think they even sent me that invitation. And I got 750 invitations.
I've never seen the volume of email I got this year from people saying, "Would you like a meeting?" It is more, isn't it? Would you like a meeting? Can we talk to you?
It is more.
Wow, what happened?
I think it's the Internet of Things. I think there's really, truly, there's a lot of stuff. I actually called it the Internet of Stuff in my in my CES pre-show report on ZDNet. I said, I'm going there just to see the Internet of Stuff, with a nod to George Carlin and all. But I think there's so many interesting niches of technology, sensors and microprocessors and, connected smart things and health-related stuff with the Affordable Care Act coming. There's going to be a lot of innovation in there, too, that...
Now you're making me want to go. Yeah. I feel bad. I'm not going. I'm going to be there. I'm going to be in Vegas the day before. Monday is the New Media Expo. I'm giving a keynote at the New Media Expo, and then I'm leaving before CES starts. Am I crazy? I should stick around. Just hang out. So the rumors include things like giving paying early termination fees for people to leave their carrier. That would be interesting. Yeah. I do have to say I love it that they're offering, even though it's Edge only, they're offering unlimited international roaming. That's a nice thing for people who travel. I want T-Mobile to succeed. The other rumor is that Sprint's bidding to buy them, which would be sad.
But that wouldn't justify that tagline that they had there.
Oh, I'm trying to think of what would.
I can't.
Something that we're either, won't believe.
We're either all going to be completely shocked or disappointed.
Incredibly disappointed.
And my money's on the latter, given previous CES press.
I mean, they're really, you know, you can tell that they're taking risks and they're trying to, be the industry. They have to, exactly. And I like that they are. I mean, I like that they are taking some risks and they're trying to do things differently. They're sort of the non-carrier is their whole thing, and good for them. I do not want to see them get bought by either AT&T or Sprint,
Dish.
Or Dish.
Apparently, Dish is in the. Although Charlie Ergen at Dish does this all the time. He just takes runs at stuff. He knows he's not going to get it. He just likes the press.
Yeah. But if Sprint buys them, doesn't that mean that SoftBank then owns them?
Everything. Then they would own everything.
Yes.
They would own the
and as
world.
Somebody who has firsthand experience with SoftBank.
As do I. No, those of us
do not want. So
they bought Ziff Davis, we should mention, at one point.
Yes. Yeah.
Masayoshi Son. Tim Draper. It's becoming the punchline now. He is a venture capitalist. He has said that he wants to split California into six pieces and make Silicon Valley its own state. Would we be part of this blue state that has no revenue at all up in the north there? I think that's where we would be. The purple is the valuable real estate. Six Californias. He's actually going, and you know, given the way the ballot measures work in California, it's almost certain that he will be able to get this on the ballot, because all you have to do is put out, if you've got the money, you can get signatures.
Well, but okay, so this is the, so Colorado, he's just copying Colorado.
Colorado is six states now?
No, no, no. There's there's a group of right-wing nuts in northern Colorado who want to partition off the six counties that they represent into a separate state. They want to just spin it off because they're tired of all the...
All those liberal lefties from Boulder and Denver screwing with them.
Boulder and Denver. They'd like to bring Colorado Springs with them, but they... They'd like to have their own Air Force.
Tim wants West California, which would be L.A. and Santa Barbara. They can have... Actually, you can have West California.
Yeah. And then you got Orange County, San Diego.
Yeah.
And then you got the Central Valley.
It's going to look very odd.
But isn't the joker in all of this that the federal government gets to say under the Constitution?
No, yes.
No.
Can't do that.
No, you can't do that.
Yeah, we fought a civil war over those kinds of things just not so long ago. This is not...
You guys could do whatever you want with the... You know, you can change the... You know, you got, what are there, 43 counties in California? You can chop those. I was raised in California, so I think I can say this. This is nuts.
Just nuttier than Peter Thiel, the guy who made a lot of money on Facebook, founded PayPal. He is putting money into a libertarian sea colony.
Yeah, I like to call these guys glibertarians. You know, everything would be just so easy if we didn't have...
If we only had an island with no regulation. Oh, that's Larry Page's idea. Actually, Thiel was paying high school kids $100,000 not to go to college. That seems like... Wow. He's investing $1.25 million into... floating autonomous colonies at sea. The Seasteading Institute. I think that this is, somebody was talking about, this is the idea was to take old, discontinued oil wells, you know, platforms, and turn them into countries.
Well, you laugh now, but when the robots overlords arrive and revolt...
That's true. You'll be glad when the zombies come. You'll be glad you're on that platform, that oil.
Hey, and the horrible thing is the singularity is going to happen, and we're going to have to live in this new world forever. So,
by the way, we just did a really great... I'm going to do a quick plug.
Plug, yes.
Yeah, we just did a great story on the idea of killer robots. This is actually a real thing that there's legislation happening around this right now. And Steve Ranger, the editor of Tech Republic in UK, did a great story on this, on the legislation that, you know, basically no kill robots, not giving robots the ability. This includes like drones and other things. But one of the great things he did in this story was he talked to people in artificial intelligence to ask them, like, how close really are we? And the answer is not very. But there is already legislation being passed and movements, you know, in UN and other places about, you know, putting together these treaties on not allowing, you know, drones to make decisions to kill human beings and why that is. And it really gets into, digs into this issue, and it's quite fascinating. It's good stuff. So it's called Robots of War, Robots of Love, and then because it also gets into the fact that robots, you know, people want to use robots to like care for the elderly, for example, and do other things. And when you put
those two together, robots that care for the elderly and have the right to decide.
Perfect timing. Yes, that's good. Yeah.
Because this is the prime directive, right?
Right. I mean, but we don't have Asimov's rules for robotics.
And it goes into Asimov's rules too, and why they're there. So it does a great, evaluation of them, and with these sort of experts who are working on AI and all of these things. And so, yeah, it's good stuff.
Sorry to conflate Star Trek with Isaac Asimov there. I apologize.
The three laws. Yeah.
Yeah. Last story. Beyoncé. Wow. 102 city tour. She just kind of manages to do a 14-track, 17-video album somewhere in between there. sells a million copies on iTunes in a week. But she made a little mistake. She made it exclusively on iTunes, where it sold very well. And by the way, using social media brilliantly, she just killed it. Well, now Amazon and Target said, well, that's that. We're not selling the CD. So what? Who cares?
I don't know. To me, the biggest, the most interesting part of that story was that they kept it a secret.
Unbelievable. She made code name
Lily, I believe it was, right?
Yeah. Well, the album, and the album is just Beyonce. Pretty impressive. And also showing a mastery of social media, of the internet. And sorry, Amazon and Target, I guess that's that. Physical media is dead. Yeah. Just like that.
People still buy music. Who knew?
Who knew?
Well, yeah, I guess, yeah, they do. And it's just the first week that she sold a million in. But a million is $10 million, right? And out of this, she's going to see $6.6 million. And when we say nice she, job. It's, you know, the company with a lot of overhead. So, yes, it's a lot of money and it's a lot of CDs, of albums sold. Is it that much of an impressive figure?
It's pretty good for 1 week. Sure. We'll see.
Maybe for one week.
Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, just going crazy with Beyonce stuff. I mean, it really, she knocked it out of the park. And I think it's so ironic that it's Amazon and Target that are saying, well, in that case, we're not going to sell the CD.
But I guess my point is that might be a problem in the end.
For her, you think?
Yeah, it might be.
You know what? Why don't you come back in about 3 weeks and we'll talk about it. Sound good?
Yeah.
Patrick Beja, not Patrick on the Twitter, where he will not retweet you. No manual retweeting for this guy. PatrickBeja.com. Great to have you on, Patrick. Always good to see
Thank you.
Thanks to Jason Heiner of the Tech Republic and CBS Interactive. Always good to see you at Jason Heiner on the Twitter.
Thank you. Sorry for the technical problems.
It's not your fault. It's not your fault.
Time Warner just took over our cable. I'm going to eliminate them. I'm going to say things about them, and I want everybody to retweet it.
Not yet. Wait till the show's over. Okay.
Send a drone.
I think I just got cut off. Sorry.
And by the way, Coffee Geek on the Twitter says that Fernet Branca is the bartender's secret friend. Tastes like Jägermeister, but without all the sugar.
Wow. Well, I looked it up. Apparently it's Italian, and it looks incredibly hipsterish.
It's so hipster. It's the hipster drink in San Francisco.
Hey, exactly. Can I plug one thing, Neil?
Yeah.
If you say no.
I insist. But
just my brother, who's a very talented musician, launched a few weeks ago his royalty-free music website called Music in Cloud. It's musicincloud.com, and he is actually very good. I'm not saying that because he is my brother. So if you need royalty-free music, please go check it out.
Well, that's awesome. So it's like clip art for music.
Yeah. Just if you need, you know, some royalty.
Is it all his stuff, or is it other people too?
It's him, him and his wife, actually.
Wow.
And he does a lot of stuff that is incredibly good. I was surprised at the variety of things he offers. So,
His timing is good with YouTube just taking down everybody left, right, and center. It's a good place to go to get some royalty-free music, which I am now playing without paying for. So,
but that's a promotion.
It's a promotion. That's it.
I give you the proxy.
This is good. This is like Django. This is awesome.
Yeah. Originally, he's a he does Manouche Jazz. Is it Manouche Jazz, you say?
I don't know what that
Django,
is.
Django, basically.
Django.
But he does a whole bunch of different things.
Awesome stuff. Yeah. Thank you, Patrick. Thank you to Ed Bott, too, at ZDNet, ZDNet.com/blog/bot, where he has
Always
been
a pleasure,
for
Leo.
10 years. But I've known him for 20. Amazing. Thank you, everybody. We do This Week in Tech every Sunday afternoon, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 2200 UTC on twit.tv. Now, I got to tell you, we will be doing a special episode next week, so I won't be here. I actually will be here that Sunday. because I'm doing the radio show, but I'll just leave early, right? Or I'll just, you know what I'll do? I'll watch it with you. We'll just sit together. We'll watch it. And then I'll go home. You can always get on-demand versions of all our shows, by the way. You don't have to be here live at twit.tv or wherever you subscribe to podcasts. Don't forget our New Year's Eve special. I am going to be here at roughly 3:30 Pacific a.m. on New Year's Eve, 6:30 a.m. Eastern time. I don't even know what time that is in the UTC. It's crazy time, 11 a.m. UTC, to do a 24-hour broadcast. And we will go to every time zone in the world and count down. And I'm hoping we'll talk to somebody. I think we have, you know what, there is a list of time zones we need. UTC plus 6, Russia, Yekaterinburg time, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Xinjiang, China, Tibet, Bhutan, or Bangladesh. If you're in one of those nations, please go to twit.tv/NYE. There's actually two time zones in Kazakhstan. Russia, Moscow time, Georgia, Armenia, United Arab Emirates, Dubai, Oman, Azerbaijan, Greenberg, and Iceland. Or I'm sorry, Greenland and icebergs. There's a place called Icebergs? UTC minus one. Possibly Brazil and Uruguay. We're not sure what the hell, if they're on summertime or not, in American Samoa. Well, go to twit.tv/NYE and sign up.
I'll fly over there and take care of
Would
it.
Would you do you. Vladivostok for us? Actually, yeah, you have your choice. You could be in Vladivostok, Micronesia, New South Wales, or Tasmania. I know we have somebody in New South Wales. That's easy. That's easy. Anyway, so this isn't up to date. I'll get a more up-to-date list for you. But it is going to be a lot of fun. Please enjoy that and enjoy responsibly, which means drinking heavily. Thank you, everybody, for joining us, and we'll see you in 24. Well, no, not really 2014, because I'll be here New Year's Eve. So we'll see you in New Year's Eve. It'll be 2014 in New Zealand. Thanks for joining us. Another twit.
This is amazing.